The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hour number two, Jimmy Sengenberger in for Stephen Tubbs today here on News Talk 710 KNUS until 7 o'clock. Good to be with you. Of course, I do host the Jimmy Sengenberger Show every Saturday morning from 6 to 9 right here on News Talk 710 KNUS, Denver's local talk leader. So news today, Wall Street Journal. Russian President Vladimir Putin said he sought to address Beijing's concerns Thursday about the Ukraine war in his first meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping since the start of the conflict, which has recently brought major battlefield setbacks for Moscow. Mr. Putin told his Chinese counterpart that Moscow highly values what he called Beijing's balanced position regarding the Ukraine crisis. He added that the Kremlin would clarify its position on Ukraine without explaining further. "We understand your questions and your concerns," Putin said in remarks broadcast on Russian state television from the meeting, which took place at a summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Uzbekistan. He also struck out at the U.S. for what he called provocations in Taiwan and said Moscow would adhere to its one China policy, which asserts that the People's Republic of China is the sole legitimate government of China. It seems to me, just as an observer with no military background, that Russia's getting nervous about China losing some support for this invasion in Ukraine that has not been going so well. It seems like China, the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping is getting a little restless about what's happening. But is that an accurate impression? What should we take away from this? Why in the world is Russia doing so poorly now? Let's talk about it with a man who was a contractor to the military intelligence community during the last decade of the Cold War. He's the author of a novel entitled Our Dogs Did Not Bark, a politically incorrect dystopian tale. And on the day that the invasion began, I happened to say to him off air, this would, you know, what imagine if we actually had the invasion begin while we were on the radio. I was filling in for Stefan. Might have even been this hour, and it literally happened while we were on the air. Keith Nobles joins me here on the program. Good afternoon, Keith. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, Jimmy?
Good to be with you, Keith. I appreciate you taking some time to offer your analysis and perspective, because this meeting between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin is pretty striking to me. Do you think that this is signaling that China's a little restless with Russia's failures in Ukraine at this point?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Some years ago, China and Russia, who have lots of competing interests, thought it would be to their advantage to form this sort of a loose alliance as a counterweight to the United States. And it's not gone well for either party. There was a phrase in World War I that Germany used quite often. Because in World War I, Germany's ally, chief ally, was the Austrian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, run by the Habsburgs. And Germany used to complain they were shackled to a corpse being allied with Austria. And that very much has to be how China feels right now. Russia has not lived up to any of their expectations as far as military prowess goes. And how long Putin can stick around with this going the way it's going is an open question.
So in terms of China at this point, I mean, what is their chief concern? Is this just that this is taking longer than anticipated? Is it that They're at a point now where the setbacks are becoming greater. The Ukrainians are just withstanding much more than they anticipated. What's the big thing that's most glaring in your assessment, Keith, regarding China?
I think China right now is probably assuming the Russian military is incompetent. And there's a very strong argument that the Russian military is incompetent.
Yes, it seems
their
like
soldiers,
it.
It's obvious. The Russian soldiers just don't want to be there doing this. And how deep that lack of morale goes, there's anecdotal evidence of pretty disastrous morale levels in the Russian army. In the recent last 2 weeks, Ukraine has retaken Kharkiv and retaken about 2,300 square miles of land that Russia had occupied in Ukraine. It's been a tremendous offensive. It exceeded, I think, anyone's expectations. But, you know, there's anecdotal evidence. Russians left behind vast amounts of equipment. They apparently, at least in some instances, they stole civilian vehicles and used those to retreat while leaving behind their tanks and armored vehicles. And what's more, seems to be pretty decent reports a substantial number of those vehicles left behind didn't even run. The maintenance was so poor, they were inoperable. So you have this Russian army that, when this started, when you and I were on the radio together, some months ago, Russia had a tremendous advantage in material and men. And that advantage just has absolutely not been useful for Russia.
Now, I want to jump in here for a moment with you. Keith Nobles, our guest. And in terms of Russia's failures, clearly you've got incompetence on display for the Russian military. But what is it that Ukraine is doing right in the meantime? Because it takes two to tango in this way. I mean, it's a different kind of tangoing. You're not doing it together. You're doing it against each other. But you're seeing victories as opposed to just defeats by the Russians.
Well, Ukraine, to everyone's surprise, when this started, there was a great deal of doubt as to what Ukraine's willingness to fight would be. Because as we discussed many months ago, Ukraine is significantly Russian in their culturally, at least probably, excuse me, it was assumed half of Ukraine would side with Russia, and that just hasn't happened.
Yeah, Keith, I'll jump in and reset for folks before I give you just a moment to clear your throat there, my friend. It always happens to the best of us. Again, Keith Nobles, for the last decade of the Cold War, was a contractor to the military intelligence community, offering his expert insights, Jimmy Sangenberger, in for Stephen Tubbs. And you really do see, Keith, this success from the Ukrainian military, the Ukrainian forces, in a way that is going beyond what anybody ever anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as I was saying before, I mean, the great unknown here at the start of this was Ukraine willing to fight? How much of Ukraine would side with Russia? And the answer's been very little of Ukraine has sided with Russia in this. Even the eastern parts of the country, which are historically and predominantly have looked to Moscow for leadership, haven't really sided with Putin and Russia the way Putin and Russia assumed they would. And the motivation, the morale of the Russian soldiers has obviously just been very low.
Right.
At this point, we don't know how low it may be. Are they refusing to attack? Are the Russian soldiers quitting the field? Those are questions I'm sure American intelligence agencies know the answer to, but we, the general public, do not know the answers to that. But it's just going disastrously for Russia, and it's difficult to see how they can recover from this. at the moment, it doesn't seem as though they can even stabilize the situation, let alone counterattack and try and retake the territory they've lost the last 2 weeks.
Now, Keith Nobles, it has been on the minds of many Americans that we are too involved in supporting Ukraine in repelling the Russian invasion, that our sending of arms or other actions and the money that's being spent on Ukraine as opposed to here on the home front, that it is misplaced and we are in error, to put it nicely, in supporting the Ukrainian government overseas for this long. What is your response to that? And in what ways would you say the support from the international community has really been directly and tangibly benefiting the Ukrainian military to the point where not only are they able to hold on to territory, but to expand and take territory back?
Well, we have this habit in the United States of trying to view things through a moral lens and weigh these questions in moral terms. For example, people say, well, Ukraine is horribly corrupt, which would be a true statement. However, we have a goal here, and the goal of the United States has been consistent since this started, and that is to bloody and damage the Russian military sufficiently that they will not have or pursue other territorial ambitions that Putin has. The whole goal here was to, in Ukraine, be able to damage the Russian military sufficiently that it would be some number of years before they would have territorial ambitions against places like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. So the whole point to supporting Ukraine with all this aid is to prevent a future situation where Russian and American soldiers are fighting against each other in places like the Baltic states. And I think it has succeeded magnificently in those terms. Russia has lost probably 5 or 6 years worth of tank production. It will probably take 7 to 10 years for the Russian military to build back to what it was 7 months ago. So, yeah, we have accomplished our policy goal here in terms of Russia.
Keith, in that regard, we were just talking about China being concerned and that sort of alliance that the two countries who are adversaries to the United States were both forging. That has to sting for China, not only that Ukraine is retaking territory, that this invasion is not going remotely as anticipated, but that their supposed ally Russia is set back so much, which helps to underscore why Putin even publicly is trying to placate China a little bit with some of his language, no?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I mentioned before, China and Russia formed this kind of loose alliance some years ago as what they perceive to be a counterbalance to the United States. And I'm sure from the Chinese point of view, Russia is absolutely not living up to their side of that bargain. I mean, Russia is, let's make no mistake, Russia still has strategic pieces in place that they can rattle around, nuclear weapons, missiles, submarines, those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, the Russian military at this point just looks incompetent. I mean, there's just no other word. I don't think that really fits. If you recall, at the start, there was this three-pronged attack up from the south of Crimea into the Donetsk Basin from the east and toward Kiev from the northeast. And that strategy completely failed, and Russia scaled it back and thought, okay, we're just going to create a landline from the Crimea along the Sea of Azov, the north shore of the Sea of Azov, to the eastern Ukraine. And it appears the last 2 weeks they may lose what they have gained. Even the scaled back ambitions appear likely to be beyond their grasp.
Yeah.
Strategically, the ground that the Ukraine has taken the last 2 weeks severely affects Russia's ability to resupply their troops in the other parts of Ukraine that they have occupied. So it's difficult to see, since Russia has not in the last 2 weeks been able to mount any kind of effective counterattack against this, how how Russia plans to reverse this situation. It just seems it may be bloody from here on out, but it's difficult to see how Russia can pull this off at this point.
Again, we're talking with Keith Nobles, longtime military intelligence contractor back during the last decade of the Cold War, and I think a couple of years after, if I recall correctly. Keith, when we look at the long-term implications here, because what you're talking about to me is not just the immediate, this is what's happening in Ukraine, it's embarrassing for Russia, China's ticked off, to put it mildly, at Russia for flubbing this so badly, but it really is setting up for long-term repercussions. You say 5 to 7 years for them to, for the Russians to rebuild their tank capacity. I do think this adds to the argument you and I wrote in Newsweek several months back when this was all beginning, that the failures in Ukraine by Russia in this invasion was dissuading China more from invading Taiwan. And I think this may be sending more signal to China. You might want to wait at least a little while longer before you seriously look at an amphibious invasion in Taiwan. But what do you think of the long-term repercussions, particularly from the Chinese vantage point, to what's happening now, Keith?
I think China's in a very bad spot. China's facing a demographic cliff. The one-child policy China has had for a long time is really biting them at this point.
And their economy is faltering.
Yes. Yeah. China's far below replacement rate. And it's not just that. It's that the marriage rate in China has dropped dramatically. So people aren't getting married in order to plan to have more children, even though China is presently encouraging people to have more children. And then, yes, their economy is faltering. I read just this morning, it's expected Chinese oil demand will be down 2.7% this year. So that's a pretty fair correlation to how much their economy will probably diminish this year. Now, last time Chinese oil demand decreased year over year was 1990. It didn't even decrease during the COVID lockdowns. So you know how bad China is hurting if their demand for oil is that diminished. So yeah, China's in a bad spot economically, demographically, and I think they have concluded they invading Taiwan would probably not be in their best interest right now. What we've seen, you know, there's a baseball analogy, Jimmy. Says you play the games on the field, not on paper. And that's what we've seen in Ukraine. Russia on paper had all the advantages, but the Ukrainian will to fight and the lack of motivation by the Russian soldiers to fight. Like I said, they don't want to be there. They don't want to be doing this. It has really made all the difference, I think, in that conflict. And China's looking at that, thinking Taiwan is probably pretty motivated to fight. And they're probably wondering how motivated their military, their rank-and-file military is to fight.
So let me ask you one final question before we let you go. Keith Nobles, again, longtime military intelligence contractor back in the 80s, early 90s. What is one thing, whether it's a misconception, a misunderstanding, misnomer, something that the American people you think are not really understanding about this conflict and what's happening in Ukraine? Because while for weeks it captivated the world, the American people were all just brought into the Ukrainian cause, feeling very distraught over all the pain and suffering that they were enduring. Now we are months into this conflict and people are scratching their heads asking questions. What do you think is one thing that people don't understand right?
I don't think they understand what the United States policy goal is here, as I stated before. Putin, for 30 years, has been very vocal in his desire to reassemble, not the Soviet empire, reassemble the Tsarist empire. He has been critical of how the Soviets absorbed territories, and he's been complimentary of how Peter the Great absorbed territories. So the assumption is pretty valid, and Ukraine would have been Putin's intent to start to reassemble that empire. But the military losses he has suffered have probably moved that out of his range. I think it's pretty fair to assume before the Russian military is rebuilt in a manner that it could again pursue territorial ambitions, Putin will probably be dead. So he's probably lost his shot here at doing that.
Fascinating and encouraging to see what the implications actually are of this. I mean, the fact that Russia is losing so dramatically in Ukraine is striking in terms of its implications, not only for that country, but for China as well. Keith Nobles, check him out on Twitter. Follow him at Author Nobles. Good to talk with you, my friend, as always. Thanks for your insights today.
Okay, thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you. Once again, Keith Nobles, longtime military intelligence contractor, joining us. Jimmy Sangenberger in for Stephen Tubbs. It's time for a break. When we come back, what do you think? Is it worth it with the implications, the repercussions that we're seeing now, the fact that Russia's being pushed back so dramatically? Is it worth what the United States government has put in terms of aid to Ukraine? What do you make of Keith Noble's analysis? I think he's rather on point here. And it is encouraging to see the apparent results of what the United States has done vis-a-vis Ukraine and the international community this year. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number to join into the conversation. You can also text on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. Once again, I'm Jimmy Sangenberger in for Stephen Tubbs here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. I don't know. This seems kind of apropos of our discussion here on Ukraine and Russia's botched invasion thereof. The Beatles with Back in the USSR. Good to be with you. Jimmy Sangenberger in for Stephen Tubbs today. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mike Lindell was raided by the FBI yesterday and his cell phone was taken. And it's interesting when you look at the list of co-conspirators in the affidavit and what they were authorized to take, because this is all about Tina Peters. It's not about January 6th. It's not about Mar-a-Lago documents. It's about Tina Peters and what happened last year with the trusted build, according to allegations in the indictment of Tina Peters. And clearly the feds are starting to move on this one. Is it unjust or is it fair how Mike Lindell is being treated? We will dive into that and some of the details and more coming up at the top of the hour. If you've been following this saga, you do not want to miss it. Of course, we will open up for the phones. We only had one guest today, just Keith Nobles, who offered up some fascinating insights on what is happening in Ukraine, saying, look, this is about the Russian military basically making fools of themselves, revealing themselves to be utterly incompetent. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians are bolstered by Western countries like the United States with weapons and more that have empowered Ukraine in pushing back against Russian forces. And today, Russia's Vladimir Putin had a meeting with the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, who raised concerns to Putin about the Ukraine war. And understandably so, they had this alliance, as Nobles was talking about, that they'd been forging over the years. And then Russia screws this up so badly, and China has to be going, wait, what the heck? What the hell's going on here? And why are you doing so damn badly? And Putin's trying to placate him a little bit and say, we understand your questions and your concerns in public remarks. Now, I asked Keith what he thinks people don't understand, and he talked about the objectives of the United States, and it's not just about repelling Russia from Ukraine, but it is about deterring Russia from further advances and clearly broader implications for Russia and China that are both being hurt by this. China's ambitions on Taiwan are not so powerful, not so overcoming as they seem to be, where China was just, it had a strong inkling to go invade Taiwan. And now they've been for months, second guessing. Is this even worth it? The Chinese economy is stumbling right now. Keith pointed out there's a 2.7% decline in Chinese oil demand, the most in years. It didn't even go down during the pandemic when they had massive shutdowns. And yet now Chinese oil demand is noticeably declining. Is that satisfactory to you? Do you think that this makes it worthwhile, or have you had reservations about the United States being involved in this Ukraine conflict by providing on-the-ground weapons support and more to the Ukrainian government? See, I haven't really had a problem with that. For my part, I agree with the analysis of Keith Nobles, and I find it broadly worth it. Am I concerned about some weapons that have been given to Ukraine going elsewhere? Sure. But it seems like the weapons that they are receiving from the West are being put to good use. As you can see with Russia losing ground, giving up territory back to Ukraine. That's striking. But I think it's also because of the leadership of Volodymyr Zelensky. Here's a clip, I think this is BBC, of Zelensky going out to his Ukrainian troops to support them, provide medals, and give them that kind of recognition that you need when you are constantly on the front lines from your nation's president.
This is what confidence in victory looks like. Delighted swagger from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky touring the liberated city of Izyum. A commander-in-chief greeted here as another human. The smiles for this president as genuine as the danger. Listen here, and you can hear explosions as he talks. It may be possible to temporarily occupy our territories, he says, but it is certainly impossible to occupy our people. These last months have been extremely hard for you. This is why I ask you, take care of yourselves, because you are the most precious thing we have. It is a victory that came at an as yet unspecified cost, this moment of silence for those dead. What he sees, utter devastation, part of why Russia is losing. It's hard to occupy and defend a city in this ruin. It's hard to imagine the Russian army's state of mind when it left behind this much of its armor. And what Zelensky did, another reason Ukrainian morale seems to remain high. Russian President Vladimir Putin is usually hundreds of miles away in Moscow when he gives out medals.
It's pretty powerful. That's pretty powerful. That kind of leadership. And when you think about how Ukraine has held on far longer than anybody anticipated, I think it's worth giving some credit where credit is due. We'll see what happens, but it does appear to me like there are some positive developments happening on many fronts in Ukraine right now, and it's not just the fact that a sovereign nation that has been invaded by an aggressor is repelling that invader. I'm Jimmy Sengenberger in for Stephen Tubbs. We're going to take a break. When we come back, well, Kamala Harris today was asked a question, and here was her answer, or not answer.
Vice President Harris, any comment on the migrants that were dropped off at the Naval Observatory?
Bus of migrants, illegal immigrants, was dropped off near the vice president's residence. And she doesn't have an answer to that question. What is the administration's message on the southern border? How tone deaf are they at this moment? And what about the fact as well that we are expecting here in Colorado to start getting buses of illegal immigrants coming to Denver and Aurora from Texas? Why don't they go to Boulder? Near Governor Polis's house. It's not a bad idea, huh? 303-696-1971. What are your thoughts? I'm Jimmy Sangenberger in for Stephen Tubbs. It's News Talk 710 KNUS. Jimmy Sangenberger here with you in for Stephen Tubbs this afternoon. News Talk 710 KNUS, Denver's local talk leader. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. We'll get to the southern border crisis in just a moment. I would be remiss for those who missed the first hour if I didn't remind you about the news that we've broken here on this program today. I put it out onto Facebook and onto Twitter. It's on my website, jimmysangenberger.com/taybodycam, all E's all the time in Sangenberger, where I've obtained the body cam footage of Tay Anderson, the vice president of the Denver Public Schools Board of Education, of his traffic stop in exchange with a police officer for speeding in a school zone last Tuesday, where he said in part, quote, in a follow-up statement, "I was disappointed by a comment that the officer made as my hands were raised, and that was him calling police brutality in the black community a myth." Well, take a listen to a portion of this body cam footage and hear for yourself what actually was said.
"Hi, I'm Officer Gann, Denver Police. I stopped you for speeding, 35 and a 25. Can I see your license, registration, please?
Permission to pull down my pocket?
Yeah, I've asked you for certain documents. I expect you to reach around to get them.
I just don't want to get shot by you."
"Well, that's a myth."
I don't believe that's a myth.
"I just don't want to get shot by you. That's a myth. I don't believe that's a myth." That was the exchange. What did it have to do with police brutality in the black community? Or Tay Anderson impugning the police officer, Officer Dan, who was doing his job, exemplary, I would add, impugning him and saying, "Ah, I think he might shoot me. You might shoot me." And then that's what he says. Oh, that's a myth. Not a very accurate representation, is it? But I digress. Let's go to the southern border crisis, where we have so many people. We don't know who they are, which countries they're coming from, what their intentions are. Doesn't mean that they're all bad, horrible human beings, or that the majority even, or a plurality even, are bad, horrible human beings. But we don't know who they are, if they're part of the drug cartels, if they're bringing in fentanyl from China, if they're bringing gang violence to the streets or what have you. That is a legitimate, genuine concern when you have such an influx of people illegally crossing our southern border. Well, the Biden administration is trying to act like everything's all hunky-dory down there. Here's a little bit of Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, asked about that.
"Okay, and I want to ask you, on the topic of immigration, the vice president said to my colleague Chuck Todd over the weekend, the border is secure. She also caveated that to say we also have a broken immigration system and talked about the need to fix that. But does the White House stand by those comments that the border is secure?"
"What we stand by is that we are doing everything that we can to make sure that that we follow the process that's been put forth. That's why we have historic funding to do just that, to make sure that the folks that we encounter at the border be removed or expelled. And again, the facts are more individuals encountered at the border will be removed or expelled this year than in any previous year. But that's the work that we have been doing."
"Is the border secure?"
I'm just going to refer back to the vice president. We agree with her. She is saying that there's a lot of work to do, right? She also said
I think
that
that's enough word salad from Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary. Well, Kamala Harris, the vice president, has had some buses of migrants dropped off near her residence. And after giving a speech, I believe it was today, the VP was asked about this and ignored the question.
Vice President Harris, any comment on the migrants that were dropped off at the Naval Observatory?
Nope. I guess she doesn't have a comment there, does she? Can you blame her, though? Because you can't say one thing and then something completely different is going on, or you can't have a more personalized experience with the buses of illegal immigrants being brought to your doorstep practically. Now, we do have an issue. We're here in Colorado. We could start seeing those buses come here. Does that concern you? Text in on the 710KNUS app or call us 303-696-1971. The governor of Texas has on his list Denver and Aurora for where these illegal immigrant buses may go as far as dropping people off. And I'm just like, well, gosh, I get it. I kind of find some of the humorousness elsewhere. But then there's this part of me that's going, NIMBY, not in my backyard. We already have people who are coming here more and more illegally. We don't know what they're doing, what their intentions are, who they are, etc., here in the Denver metro area. And then you want to bus them in? Into our own community? I would be cool with it maybe going up to Boulder, near Governor Polis's residence, perhaps. But bottom line is, we have a serious issue, don't we? It is a crisis at the southern border that is not being addressed. And it needs to be addressed. It needs to be handled. The president has just toured some electric vehicle factory or some factory. But he hasn't toured the southern border. Where is he? Where is his czar, border czar, the Vice President Kamala Harris?
Vice President Harris, any comment on the migrants that were dropped off at the Naval Observatory?
Speechless. That's where she is. Has no comment, no observation, no thought that she wants to share because her hands are tied, verbally speaking, figuratively speaking. And when we look at the vice president, we look at the president, and we see that they are asleep at the wheel here, it should concern every single American, regardless of where you are at politically. Every single American. And here we are with an administration that doesn't seem to care or have any answer, doesn't seem to care. Let's just say it flat out. They don't care. Period. We'll see if it coming into their backyard, so to speak, or their front yards, will make a difference. But I'm not holding my breath. I'm not expecting the Biden-Harris administration to suddenly change their minds about all of this and suddenly say, oh, we're going to crack down on the southern border. They've given invitations for people to come here. And those invitations are being accepted. I think we've got about a minute here remaining in this segment. Let's squeeze in Jason in Colorado Springs. Good afternoon, Jason. You're on with Jimmy and for Stefan.
Hi, Jimmy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. We're tight on time, so what's on your mind?
Oh, it's going to be very quick. If you had Ms. St. Pierre, regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, whatever,
yes,
who got on your show and couldn't complete a sentence in the amount of time that it takes for me to complete this whole point, you would ask her. Like, she can't even complete a sentence without 37
ups. Yes. And that's,
I mean,
because she's flipping through her notebook.
With her.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
No,
and she's flipping through her notebook.
You give me 1 minute, she wouldn't have a chance. She wouldn't even get her name out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She has no answer. She has no capability for that. Jason, I appreciate the call at 303-696-1971. She's just fumbling. It doesn't matter what race or gender or sexual orientation she is. If you're the White House press secretary, you got to be on the ball. Could you imagine Kayleigh McEnany fumbling her way through an answer on a topic that's an obvious question? I can't. But that's Karine Jean-Pierre. We'll pick up the conversation on the border. Plus, Mike Lindell, his cell phone was taken. Is that unjust or is it fair? It's all about Tina Peters. We'll pick it up. Jimmy in for Stefan. Stay with us.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.